Welcome to Value Through Vulnerability. This is a podcast dedicated to putting the human back into humanity, and I'm your host, Gary Turner. I'm also the founder of Hexo Change, and Hexo Change is a transformational change practice dedicated to helping you connect to yourself, to others, and to systems at large in a more meaningful way, thus helping us turn around our workplace and planetary challenges and accelerating how alive we all feel in every aspect of our lives. This track is called Kaleidoscope and was created for me personally and for Hexo Change by Peter Griffiths, one half of the amazing Mind Takeaway. I hope you enjoy this exploration and please do share it on your social platforms so we can bring more humanity to more people. Hope to speak to you soon. Welcome to Value Through Vulnerability. This is a podcast dedicated to putting the human back into humanity. And we are now boosted by Humans First. And we have founder Mike Vacanti co-hosting with me today. And we have got the wonderful Kelly Yost here, who is a flexible workplace strategist, futurist, founder, author, and speaker. And Kelly, I have to say, I love how your tagline on LinkedIn is reimagine how, when, and where work is done. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, well, I'm glad we finally got you.
I know.
After a few months. But when we were trying to get you before, we didn't have any of this challenge. So I think it's the right time.
Everything happens when it's supposed to, right?
I love that so much. As we get going, would you mind just taking a few minutes just for our listeners to learn a bit more about you? How did you get into this sort of passion around remote working?
Believe it or not, it started in the early 90s. I was a very junior manager in a bank. I'd gone through the management training program. So I was put in charge of a group of people, all of whom were older than I was. I was married at the time. I did not have children, but they were all starting to have children. It was actually men and women. And I just kept seeing that the lack of flexibility was causing my business to suffer. So the lending that we did was lending to closely held companies. So in that market, it's very important to have a strong relationship between the banker and the customer. So when you lose a banker, your business becomes vulnerable. So I just needed to hold on to these people. And at the time, I oddly had become interested in this sort of emerging field of flexibility. I don't know why. I don't know what sparked it for me, but I just was kind of looking at it on the side over here. And I went to my leadership and I said, hey, why don't we either let them have a reduced schedule or work remotely? Again, this is the early 90s. And my management was like, what? Okay. I don't even know what that means. And so long story very short, it just seemed to make so much sense to me. And then I actually had a meeting with a CEO of a bank that we had his accounts. And one of our bankers had left again because they couldn't have flexibility. And he said to me that was a mistake. And I was confused. And all of a sudden this man across this desk said to me, oh, I give my people flexibility and they stay with me forever. And it's all about good business. And it was one of those moments where like the angels sing and things kind of stop. And I'm like, okay, this is a real thing and I am doing it. And so I left banking, went back to business school, got my MBA and just started doing this work back in, I guess it was 95 is when I started.
Wow. Wow. That's a phenomenal story.
You know, it's just one of those things where, you can see something emerge and you just know in your bones that this is a strategic business imperative. And the fact that it does not exist is bad for you, not only the organization, but just unnecessarily bad for people. And then you also know in your bones, because you've seen it, that when people get flexibility in how, when, and where they work, you get so much more. So all of the things that keep leaders from resisting shifting their cultures and making flexibility part of the cultural DNA, it you want to just be able to show them that if you take the leap, you really are going to reap so much of the reward. So again, I'm hopeful that this moment in time where we've all been sort of thrown into the flexibility deep end, and you know, even sort of against your will and involuntarily, you now have to do this. It's going to open the door for all that other good stuff on the other side.
Yeah. You know, I love that, Kelly. And I think of when you're telling the story of going to your managers in the bank first and saying, you know, to explore remote work, and they didn't understand the concept and maybe were in their minds thinking, why would somebody want to work from the lunchroom? It's like, no, we're talking about actually out of the building, right?
Yeah.
And so that being in the 90s, I imagine that you still bump into some of that rigorous thinking even today.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I could almost forgive it. Well, let's be real. I could almost forgive it in the 90s because, you know, we didn't even really have mobile phones. There wasn't really email. I mean, it was really like I walked into the room and said, let's all just fly to Pluto and do our work. I mean, I really do give them all a lot of rope because it was so nutty at the time. Now we have the technology. So it isn't necessarily the lack of technology. I've given this a lot of thought over the years. And I made the strategic decision a few years ago that I really was only going to work with visionary leaders who really saw the need to make the shift for the variety of reasons. I wasn't going to spend a lot of time with leaders who didn't want to do the work or understood what was possible. So what I've seen from the visionary leaders, so I will juxtapose that to leaders who resist, is they just understand things have to change. They just saw it for their business, that business as usual, the status quo, ultimately was not going to prepare them for success in the future. That you have a whole new generation of people that are walking into the workplace just inherently flexible. They see work as a what? They see work as a thing you do. They don't see work as a place you go. So to attract and retain and motivate that generation, you really have to meet them where they are and adapt your workplace accordingly. Also, it's a shift in mindset. It's a letting go that I think a lot of them are afraid of, that if I let go, it's going to be chaos, nothing's going to get done. And how do you know people are working? How do you engage with them? It's a whole new way of leading that I don't think they necessarily were confident they were going to be able to make that pivot. So this is what I'm hoping. Again, we're here, we're in it. How do you now leverage the learning of this moment and adopt some of that new leadership and really now embrace this flexible way of working so that you can, again, not only get through this crisis, but at the other side, attract and retain the top talent, really help people be their most productive, leverage all this technology, leverage the workspaces that you would use. So you maybe don't have to have as much physical space, but you're really using the physical space that you have. How are you serving your customers more effectively? I'm hearing a lot of doctors say my patients love telemedicine because they don't have to come all the way into the office, and their relatives can participate in the appointment with them. I see financial planners saying, you know, I thought I had to be physically in the same room with them. People want to meet after work. People want to meet before. There's just a lot of wonderful benefits from strategic flexibility done well. So that's what I'm hoping.
And the point of time, as you say, the recognition is there now to move forward. The technology and tools are there. There was one more limiting thought that we were starting to touch into a little bit. And it, you know, I think of myself going to work as a teenager and at a manufacturing factory. And I would walk in at a particular time and I would punch the clock and I would take my physical time card and punch it into this thing on the wall and it would make the stamping noise. And I would do that at break and I would do that at lunch and I would do that at the end of the day. And most of the workforce has never had that experience. Yet we hold on to that mentality of 8 to 5, 9 to 5, yeah. That those rigorous hours. And perhaps this is the opportunity to really let go all of those limiting beliefs in our heritage that no longer serve a purpose.
You know, especially now, it's interesting. You know, time is such an organizing framework, right? So that's part of it. It's like, what's the organizing framework around work? You know, there's also legal issues too. I mean, there's some real legal parameters that also reinforce some of that time-related boundary thinking. But it's interesting, currently in this crisis remote experience we're having, and also even people who aren't working remotely, so manufacturing organizations, for example, they are having to break with those time boundaries. And two reasons. One, a lot of parents are not able to work in those, you know, 8 to 5, nine, they have children that they now have to not only just watch, but educate, because they're not going to school. So you have parents now saying to managers, I'm coordinating with my partner, I'm coordinating with whatever support I have, but I'm now working from 7 to 11, and then I'm going back on from 3:30 to 8. If you need me, text me, but I can't participate in meetings. So you have managers now that you have people who are kind of operating at these different periods of time just out of necessity right now. So that's an interesting coordination. And then in manufacturing, which I think is also very important to consider, they're having to switch over to this A and B teaming framework, where they're having to potentially extend shifts. So maybe make more shifts happening at different times, and then staggering those shifts, and so that people are not in the space at the same time to allow for the social distancing. So again, it's kind of breaking some of those constraints of time and saying, how do we operate now in this new normal? So it'll be interesting when the health concerns are no longer as pressing to see then what ultimately happens when we go into the next phase. It's going to be very interesting.
I love that, Callie and Mike. I think one of the things I'm hearing a lot at the moment, and is a phrase actually that someone used last Monday on our Humans First call, was one of our colleagues said, now I'm running at 30 to 40 miles per hour. Wow. I'm seeing and sensing way more than I did when I was running at 90 or 100. And I think that realization for people that actually this slowing down, I'm now seeing and sensing the world in this peripheral vision and not this myopic focus. Mm-hmm. How does that play into some of your work around remote working and how you help people design work, do you think, going forward? Now people are, they say, almost forced to wake up to some extent.
You know, it goes back to this word. I tend to say a lot, so I'm going to apologize in advance if I just say it a lot, because I don't mean to repeat it over and over again, but it really does describe where I think we are. It's switching from automatic to intention. Okay. So all of this, there is an opportunity. So when work was 9 to 5 in the office, you go there, you come home, there's sort of an automatic pilot that I think a lot of people could find themselves operating in. Whereas now it's, again, that goes back to what am I trying to get done? And now it's how and when do I do it best? Where is set for a lot of people? It's remotely, you are doing it remotely. But then how and where do I do that best? There's a sense of thoughtfulness that has to go into that. And also you're being forced to, you know, really think about what is going on. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm also going, you probably are hearing my child come in. Okay, so this is the other piece of this intentionality that has to happen, which is we have people now trying to remote work in spaces where all their other family members are remote working. So in terms of sensing, there's a lot of hearing and a lot of, you know, just negotiating what they're doing as well. So again, it goes back to that intentionality that we didn't have to deal with before.
I love that.
It reminds me, Callie, of that. One of the things that's making me chuckle the most at the moment is not more than 18 months ago, professionalism. Remember the attaché who was abroad and his wife came in with the kid?
Right?
It's like 18 months ago, that was like viral. look at them.
I know.
They were back on the news 3 weeks ago. Were they? So like, I just think what's really fascinating, and I feel you're both speaking to this, is there's the belief systems that we have held are not challenged for so long. It's literally like the glass ceiling is gone. So I think about like inclusion. I think about race and gender and sex. Mm-hmm. And just, do we really need to hold on to those isms anymore, Callie? And how does remote working help us give minorities more freedom to not have to maybe come in as far for travel, or, you know, just the whole opportunity to redesign work and society, I think is really exciting if we grab it.
Well, I just think what it's done again is it's sort of gotten rid of this, these artificial barriers that we've put around all these different parts of our life. So you can't help now when you are interacting with somebody in their home, you really can't help but see their life. You really can't. And it humanizes things in a way that it really didn't before. So I can't help, I'm going to be honest, like I'm like, oh, Gary, that is a really beautiful painting of the ocean behind you. Do you love the ocean? Like, it makes me think, does Gary really love the ocean? I wonder where that was. And, you know, perhaps you might think Callie's background is relatively sparse. Well, then you would find out I am in a temporary apartment right now because we unfortunately scheduled construction to happen right in the middle of all of this. So, you know, again, it humanizes, it just makes people human. And I do think it opens up the door to say, we're all in this together. Like we all, you know, what's your specialness that you're bringing to the table? Let me show you all of mine.
Right. No longer, what are you hiding?
Right.
And without that discovery, we can get into what we need to do together.
Yep. Exactly.
Because I'm not sitting here trying to evaluate and figure the other person out.
Right. And you know, again, I think we'll figure out what the boundaries are after that. You know, maybe there is a little bit of, okay, so maybe there are some people, and I want to be always mindful of this because I see this when I go into organizations. There are some people who are very private and don't want those boundaries breached. And so I do think part of this is going to be figuring out that that fit for everybody and pulling them together and coordinating them in a way that's comfortable for all people. So,
you know, and the vision that you had, again, back in the 90s when it occurred to you, and then you shared that brilliant moment when you got to the client and you know, the trumpets,
yep,
the angels came and yep, moment of clarity. So having that vision back then and then watch it take place incrementally and watch some of those barriers come down, it often occurs to me that so much time is still spent in the pursuit of figuring out how business best works. Mm-hmm. And I have to believe that we already have that answer. We already know very well how business works. And for 20 years now, you've been envisioning how it can work better.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share some of that journey of what that's like, helping people discover forward rather than wait for every brick on the path to be laid before they'll take a step forward?
I have been so blessed to deal with some of the most amazing visionary leaders over the years. And I keep coming back to that because that really is where it begins, is somebody who says, we just have to do this differently. And we're all going to dive in. Let's do it. And they step up and they put the mandate out there and they're willing to create the space. And you guys used this word earlier when we were talking, create the space for experimentation, create the space for sort of fumbling around and learning new ways of communicating and coordinating and planning the work and allowing people to creating a model of shared leadership. At the end of the day, that's what it is, because we spend so much time saying it's managers that have to control this. Actually, they play a role for sure, but it's all of us. It's employees doing their part. It's teams coordinating with each other. And then it's managers creating the environment where people know what the priorities are, and that ongoing dialogue between what's expected and what am I doing, and giving people the resources they need and coaching them. You know, it's a coaching model of management. It's not necessarily top down. really creating the space for people to not only learn to do things differently and think about things differently, but then put it into action and make the mistakes, but also have the victories and feel really good about it. People have said to me, how do you keep doing this for 20 plus years and still love it so much? And honestly, it's the magic of watching those light bulbs go off and just seeing the productivity that's unlocked, the sort of passion for their jobs, how good they feel about their work, how good they feel about their life, like, and the craziest, smallest things that they get to do that they are so excited about. Like, honestly, it does not take much. That's what I say to leaders. I'm like, people just want the smallest things. Like, I was able to go to my son's science fair.
Right.
Like, and managers will say, that's great. And it means so much to that person. Or I was able to stay home. Truly, this is a mind blow. I was able to stay home and get my dishwasher delivered during the week. Otherwise, I was going to have to wait 4 weeks for a Saturday delivery. And, you know, you think about it, why does that mean so much to you? Well, I now have clean dishes for 4 weeks rather than having to deal with washing dishes and not, right? So all of this means something. Or recently a leader said to me, he has a bike path from work in New York. So he either can go 15-minute path, which is more direct, or he can go along the river, which takes him 20 more minutes. And he said, the days I get to do my 20-minute longer ride coming to work, I just feel so great by the time I get here. And my phone is on. The leader of this department can get me if she needs me. He said, but man, I just love those days and I appreciate them so much. So, you know, again, this is why it's so powerful. And then let's just talk about this moment we're in now. So that organization that did that work to shift to high performance flexibility for the talent purposes, for the productivity reasons, for the leveraging of resources, all of that, they're able to switch on a dime when they needed to in response to this crisis. And that is what I've heard over and over and over again, is they all knew what to do, is they just did it. And that was not why they went into it, but they knew on some level that this was what it was going to prepare them for. And they are still operating because they were set up to do it.
That preparation is a word that, you know, has been used a couple of times in the conversation. And I think it's so critical. We still have some time, but little time before things start winding back and doors start opening again. How quickly can companies prepare and start making that adjustment? You know, I love that you said people respond to that freedom of choice, right, Kelly? Mm-hmm. And once they understand they have that freedom of choice, it's amazing how many times they'll choose to do exactly what you may have asked them to do.
Yep,
but
yep.
The attitude is totally different because they had that freedom of choice rather than being irritated for all those days because my dishwasher's not there. I can fully focus on what I'm doing.
Yep.
So the path to getting there in this abbreviated window, in this time of great need, is that something companies can turn on and prepare in a hurry to accomplish?
Well, I do think there is, okay, so it's very important to understand that what we're in right now is a remote work, like a rapid crisis remote work response. This is not an intentional cultural shift to high performance flexibility. This is a very different situation. But still, I think that organizations can put some degree of structure around this. They can begin to set themselves up to ultimately leverage what they've learned in this moment, okay? So I do think that it's very important to leverage whatever technology you have. I'm not a big fan of all of a sudden adopting all sorts of new technology in this moment. I think it's a lot for people. I do think that managers and leaders can start to be specific about priorities. I don't know how well that is done in most organizations right now. I think there is a tendency to sort of think people are working because they're showing up at the office, whereas now you have to be a lot more clear about this is what our priorities are, and then make sure you're in that ongoing cadence with your people. Okay, how are you, you know, are we accomplishing that goal? Are we having problems? What do we need to get done? You know, having much more of an active dialogue around priority setting, updates, that is what is required in a flexible work culture. So practice that right now. Make sure you're having those updates. And I do think there is an engagement on the part of individuals in terms of being intentional on their end also about what it is they're doing and how, when, and where they're doing it best. So that is also the beginning of the shared leadership model that ultimately has to be in place. But again, I think there's going to be some adaptation that's going to have to happen once the crisis is over, where you're going to actually have to go back and say, okay, so what skills do we need? Because everybody's going to be kind of coming at this from a different place. And you want to have a consistency in terms of how people are thinking about their jobs, thinking about work, about how teams are coordinating with each other, about how people are using technology, and about how managers are leading, that there will probably be some inconsistencies once this is over that you want to round out, and then you want to actually execute on going forward for the next phase strategy of the business. Does that make sense? So right now it's survival. Okay. Like, we want the business to survive. We want to get through this. The next phase is going to be, okay, so what does growth look like? What does our market look like? And then how can we align that flexibility to achieve those goals? So that's what I think we can. There's some near-term things you can do to begin to put some of that structure around it. Again, like being clear about what the priorities are, leveraging the technology you have, helping, coordinating and communicating with each other effectively, helping your people be intentional about what they're trying to do, and then leverage what you've learned from that on the other side.
What's coming up for me, Callie, which is really interesting, is like, you really are just proving for me the importance of the human connection throughout this whole journey. You know, mm-hmm. transparency, intentionality, listening, clarity. You know, these are all things that when we're super busy in our heads, they're the things that get left behind. So it's a real opportunity to really beef up that sort of humanistic connection, isn't it? So that we all thrive as we come out of this. It's what it feels like.
Yes. And you know what the irony is? You do that, you get more performance and productivity, right? Because that's one of the magic parts about shifting your culture to become more flexible, is that you do have to focus on what it is you're trying to do. Like, what are we doing? And that requires more discussion and more conversation and more humanness, right? But people often ask me, why is there such a bump in productivity? Well, because you are finally talking to each other, you're being thoughtful about what you're trying to do, you're being intentional, you're being creative. All of a sudden, people are saying to each other, why are we having that meeting? Or could we do that differently or better? Or, hey, I have this really good idea. And there's an openness to that that didn't exist before. And that makes you more productive and more effective, right? So it's a win-win on both sides.
Is there an element, Callie, where people perhaps don't feel they have to capitulate to, they don't have to fit into the mold as firmly as they may have been, as they walk in the door every day?
I think they feel there's more flexibility to just be their best self. Does that make sense? Because again, it's not one size fits all. I mean, there are people, now I will say this, interestingly enough, I think there is a fear that if you open things up and you say to people, okay, so this is what we need to do, now you determine how, when, and where you do it best, nobody's going to show up, okay, to the physical office space. Actually, we find interestingly that people do want to be physically together. They do. There is an element of physical interaction, real-time interaction, that people do really enjoy. So that they're very, there's a continuum of that, right? You have the people who really just don't like to work remotely. That there are people right now who are just cannot wait to get back into a physical office because that's their preferred way of operating. And then you have the people who, you know, if left to their own devices, they do like being, having less of the overwhelm that they sometimes feel in a physical place. So again, it's kind of people can determine what works best for them. There are some managers who will still like to have that one-on-one FaceTime together in a physical environment. Then there are some managers who just are very comfortable leading and managing off of a collaboration platform like Asana, where they're just writing notes to each other. I mean, it really all depends. And I find there's just more openness to figuring out what that looks like for each person.
For their own dynamics.
Yep, exactly.
It's lovely, isn't it, Mike? We're sort of coming to this personalization of work, which was sort of, for me, even a dream 2 years ago when I really sort of stepped into this space of culture and, you know, human-centered design. It's fascinating, Kelly, because I just, it must feel for you like it's been a long time coming on the one hand, but at the same time, you've seen progress, I guess, incremental adoption over time. Could you mind speaking to that a little bit? I'm really curious, just as before we wrap up, as to what that journey has been for you, and maybe what were some of the challenges for you? What, you know, we sort of value through vulnerability. What was maybe one of the biggest challenges for you on that journey, if you wouldn't mind sharing that? I'm intrigued.
That's a great question, Gary. So a couple of the pivot points for me, I first got out of business school and I worked for Families and Work Institute, which was one of the sort of leading edge think tanks in the area of flexible work. And I was just so blessed and grateful for that opportunity because it truly was wonderful. But what was happening in that those early days was there's a sense that this was a top-down HR policy, one-size-fits-all policy. And I saw pretty quickly that actually, no, that it was a process. It had to be a process where you would consider all the different variables of a particular job or of a particular business, that the process was consistent, but the inputs would be different. And so then the outputs would be different. And there had to be a space for that. And also critical to that was individuals had to play a role. You couldn't sit passively and have the organization give you flexibility. You need to play an active role in that. And so I went out looking for that skill set for individuals, could not find it. So of course I was like, well, I guess I got to write the book. So that's where the work-life fit piece of this comes in, is for flexibility to succeed in the organization, individuals need to be capturing that flexibility and intentionally using it, not only day to day, but then at major life transitions. So my books were really the solution set for the individual to come to the table as a full partner. And then the next pivot point for me was that decision I made to really focus on the visionary leaders that were coming along and I was meeting who wanted to make that culture change, really fundamentally shift their cultures and make flexibility part of the DNA, but also part of the strategic decision making. And, you know, the frustration there probably was I would meet so many leaders that I would see all the possibilities for their organizations. And they just, for whatever reason, couldn't make the leap. They just, they didn't have the support from their senior leadership. In many cases, it's because HR was telling them, oh, we have this, we've already done it. When really they hadn't, but they couldn't fight that. You know, it was like, so, you know, again, I thought, we're just going to keep building the momentum with one leader at a time, one organization at a time. And here we are. And so my hope now is the door's been opened and now let's all walk through and let's now make this part of our culture and the part of the way we work.
So wonderful. And, you know, you had mentioned again that you get a chance to work with visionary leaders and by intention, because it's those that are going to step forward and they're visionary to start with, and they're looking to how do we expand from here. So that's brilliant. And then you also spoke to bumping into some of the old mindset. And the difference between those leaders, is there one limiting belief or thought that you would ask them to evaluate for those that are stuck in becoming visionary? Is there something you could recommend that they remove from their arsenal or their thought bubbles to help them move forward?
Two. One is this intense fear of abuse, which I don't understand. I think, you know, we've said this, but there is such a fear that if you open the floodgates, people are just going to abuse the privilege and not work. And when the truth is, they're going to give you more. And so maybe there's going to be 5%. Let's say it's 5% that just can't seem to get it together and make it happen. I'm going to tell you, 9 times out of 10, when that person comes across the radar, you look more deeply, that person's just fundamentally a performance problem. It's got nothing to do with the flexibility. It's that this person's just not a good match. And so we have to address them as a performance problem that they are. So I would just say, God, you know, really try to get past your fear of abuse and know if that happens, you'll deal with it. But just see the vast possibility of just all the good that can come out of it. The second thing I would ask them to do is say, what's the worst thing that can happen? Okay, you train your people to be intentional about what they're trying to get done and how, when, and where they do it. You train your teams to coordinate with each other in an intentional, fundamental way. And then you give your managers the skills and tools to be a really fantastic coach, motivator of your people. And then you say, hey, let's spend 6 weeks practicing together with this new way of being. What is the worst thing? I mean, like the worst thing that can happen is nothing. Okay. And, you know, but there's a whole lot of awesome that could also happen there. And so we always do a pre and a post before and after we do our pilot after the launch. And the reason we do that, the reason I started doing that is I wanted to show nothing bad happened. So the question is, this, you know, during the pilot period, how did what we're doing impact productivity, high performance flexibility impact productivity? I just want to see no negative. But inevitably, after 6 weeks, we see a high percentage saying it's grown, it's improved. So, you know, it's these two fears. It's this fear of abuse. It's this fear that something, productivity is going to take a huge hit and wheels are going to come off the bus, that keeps you from just seeing all this wonderful upside. And I would just ask them to challenge those two mindsets.
Excellent. That's really excellent.
It's brilliant. And thank you for so much actionable information. Like I've just been popping all over the place listening to you, Callie, around, wow, you could try this, you could try that. Because I work within a big corporate as a day job. So I'm just thinking, like, how do you, it's so applicable. Like, you've given a gift today. Like,
thank you.
No, but really you have, because if people are open, they can run that experiment tomorrow with their team of 5 people.
Yeah.
They're going, you go and let's practice remote working. Let's put in place this practice and run it for 6 weeks and see what happens. Like, it doesn't need to be a big top-down corporate sign-off, does it? You can just run your experiment in your team.
Well, I will tell you, most recently, the projects that we've had have been what I like to call sort of, you know, visionary leaders within a bigger organization that just said the way we're doing it is not working. And so I'm doing it my way because I just need my business to operate differently. And it's so interesting to see after they do it. And while they're doing it, people are like, like, what's that? Oh, no, that. And then afterwards, and they see what happens. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow. Okay. You know, so you really don't have to wait. You can take the lead. And again, we're in a crisis period right now. And so my advice right now would be just put some pretty simple things in place. Okay, don't go crazy trying to innovate. You're already innovating in real time, but just be intentional about what you want to learn from this period and then how you're going to take it and you're going to build on it in a very deliberate way, in a consistent, deliberate way, to get everybody on the same page and moving in the same direction. that's where you ultimately want to go.
That's such sage advice. Be open-minded about the possibilities through this time. That's the best decision to make, is become open-minded about what's next.
Yeah.
That's wonderful, Callie. Offline sometime, I have a story to tell you about that remote working, how people want to come back together. As I was leading a merger and acquisition, and I was out in Seattle, and there's a story with that, but it was one last point, because you had made it about the intention and about the expectation of how people can come together and work. One key area that often comes to failure over that management thinking and being able to bring together remote teams is through mergers and acquisitions. Mm. And it was just one last question I would ask of you is, you know, do you see that, is there an example of that playing out positively in that merger and acquisition environment?
Oh boy, let me think about that. Oh yeah, okay. So we helped one of, in the US, actually it's a global, a professional services firm do a very quick culture shift pivot a few years ago. They were behind, they were way behind. And the CEO is like, I gotta get ahead. So let's do this thing super fast, okay? And so we did it. And it's so fascinating to see, because the cultural DNA was so strongly set in that main organization. They've probably grown through mergers and acquisitions over the last 7 or 8 years, probably doubled in size. And to see how that strong cultural framework, DNA framework that they implemented, has allowed them to integrate all of these acquisitions and consistently continue to scale that.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. And it's funny, this same organization, they just called me the other day because they're now trying to figure out how to really seriously help some of the parents that are in their organization. And they were calling me, they're like, hey, you know, I'd love to know some of the sort of cutting edge things that you're doing for other clients. And what they were thinking of doing, I'm like, that would be cutting edge what you're doing right now. That's good. And they're like, oh, good. Okay, great. You know, again, it just keeps going. It just keeps evolving. And it's been wonderful to watch where they've taken it. But I do see that consistent thread still throughout that organization all those years later, as they've even doubled in size. So.
And I really wanted to put that on the table for the listeners and for you, because of the brilliant work that you do. Because when we come out of a cycle of where businesses are a bit deflated, there will be significant M&A activity on the backside of this, because there'll be companies that are in need. And I believe in the work that you do, and that they're I wanted to put that on the radar, because it's a heads up of a way for them to get ahead.
Yeah. Well, I will say, and this is where I'm going to semi nerd out on finances. I do think one of the elements with this, two things. One, I do think that there is still a lot of short-term financial pressure on the senior-most leadership of organizations that I sometimes wonder keeps them from being able to do some of the, invest in some of the effort to shift cultures. Just because I do think there is a slightly delayed tail in terms of seeing the return in the bottom line. And so I would hope that is the awareness of the strategic power of flexibility from this moment, that it shows the world of finance that the organizations that can pivot quickly because they do have that flexibility in place, they're financially going to continue, where the ones that didn't are going to struggle. So from that, there'll be more of a support and acceptance to allow for that to move forward. And I do think for board of directors, I think boards need to educate themselves in terms of the strategic power of high performance flexibility so that they can support senior leadership and encourage them to make the effort that allows that framework to be in place to support that merger activity.
That's a nice full picture, isn't it?
That's stunning. I know we've got to let you go, Kelly, but that insight, that's not one I've foreseen around this conversation, which is actually how could potentially part of the system change in that?
It has to, actually. Yeah, it really does. And I think there will be, this is another one of my hopes, is that there will be an awareness in the financial system that this is really mission critical and part of what has to happen.
We're all on the same page as we finish this wonderful conversation. Kelly, thank you so much. Thank you, Mike. How can people find you, Kelly, if they want to follow up the conversation or follow you?
Well, I am at theflexstrategygroup.com. And you can find me on Twitter and you can find me on LinkedIn. As Gary knows, I post frequently on various aspects of this topic. And we are actually going to be launching a series in the next couple of weeks. For 6 weeks, we're going to be focusing on giving some insights and resources to managers and employees and leaders to help them really leverage this moment. At least in the US, I think through the end of May, we're probably going to be in this pretty extreme shelter-in-place mode. But then things are going to slowly start to evolve. And just these 6 weeks are a good time to sort of get some of that structure in place and begin to think about how you can learn from it. So go over to our site. We're going to be announcing it in the next week or so. And I hope you join us.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, Kelly.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you both.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi there, your podcast host Gary Turner here, just wrapping up a brilliant conversation with Kelly Yost. Really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I know that Mike did. Before I just finish up with a couple of final reflections, I'd like to advise you that in a few days' time, on April the 30th, there will be a free Humans First rally taking place with a whole range of awesome human beings, with Mike himself, Heather Younger, Claude Silver, Cornell Thomas, Jeff Eichler, Kimberly Davis, Nuria Rojo, Brooke Errol. See where I check my mind now. Marcel Swantes, Mark LeBusk, Amy Edmondson, Bob Chapman, Minda Hartz, me. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely awesome. So there's basically 22 speakers across a 10-hour period, and it's all completely and utterly free. And you can find the details at the top of the show notes, and we'd love to have you along. Back to this particular conversation. Some of the things that really resonated with me that Kelly shared was where she spoke about the fact that it's also a shift in mindset around this move to intentional, flexible working. You know, it's a letting go that many leaders are afraid of, as they feel it's going to be chaos, nothing's going to get done. How do you know that people are working? How do you engage with them? It's a whole new way of leading that many are not comfortable with, and many aren't able to make that pivot. What I'd like to invite people to think about is that a organizational design issue, or is it a belief issue within the leader? I would lean more towards the latter. So actually, we often hold on to our beliefs without challenging them for far too long. And I've certainly done that in my own life. And I'd love to invite you just to think about one or two things right now as you listen to these reflections, you know, a couple of things that you believe to be true, and just check in with yourself. Do you still believe they're true? Or actually, can you actually dissolve that thinking because it doesn't serve you anymore? Just something to have a little think about. I also thought it was interesting where she shared an example of visionary leaders within a bigger organization saying that the way that they were doing things just wasn't working. So a team took it on themselves to do it a different way. They needed the business to operate differently. And Kelly referenced that it was so interesting to see after they did that, and indeed whilst they were doing that, how other people became interested within the organization. And my whole hairs were on the back of my neck going up. So this is exactly what I achieved alongside my line manager within my work organization over 3 years. between 2015 and 2018, where we increased sales by over 6 million and margin by 1.5 million by intentionally designing the work around our people. Admittedly, it didn't involve a remote working element, although I think that could add even more value going forward for different parts of the team. But the international sales team were already remote. But on a like-for-like basis, there was a huge transformation in our team performance, and we didn't seek permission. We ran the experiment just as Callie is referencing within this example. So that really made me feel, yeah, that's pleasing to hear that. And it's great to hear that there's other positive stories going on out there as well. We just need more of them in the public eye. It's also interesting hearing Callie speak about the fact that she said, I do think there is an engagement on the part of individuals in terms of being intentional on their end also about what they're doing, how, when, and where they are doing it best. And I think it's easy to get wrapped up. It's easy to be a victim sometimes, particularly in these fast paces of change where we'd ideally like to settle down into a place of presence and quiet and just hope that everything just stays static for 10 minutes. But what's the opportunity that you can seize if you're listening right now? You know, how much different could your world look if you had a bit more courage and a bit more accountability to try and design the life right now that potentially you could only have dreamed of 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks ago? But all bets are on right now, I would invite. Just wonder what you're thinking around that. I'm not being naive. I know there's some really horrible things going on and it's very difficult out there. But I'd like to invite people to, as my friend Mike and co-host would say, you know, head up and eyes forward. You know, how can we try and step into a version of better, individually and collectively, that maybe we couldn't envision even a few weeks ago? I think it was super powerful, as well as my final wrap up, when Kelly shared that where we are right now, it's about switching from automatic to intention. Now it is how and when do I do my best? There is a sense of thoughtfulness that has to go into that. And I think this links as well when Kelly shared that, you know, the younger generation just won't stand for it. You know, they don't see work in the same way that I do or did, and certainly how my parents did. You know, the people don't need to suffer in silence for a paycheck anymore, particularly with this flexibility that's being evidenced, as we're seeing over the last few weeks. There's so much hope, so much opportunity for those leaders that can be more progressive, can be more open-minded. And as Callie says, who are more visionary, who can look beyond the next 3 months, which unfortunately is still the prevailing financial paradigm, and one that all three of us agree is ready for a systemic reset. So please do connect with Callie. She's an incredible human being. Just learned so much from her during this conversation. You can find her contact details in the show notes. You can find my details in the show notes as well as Mike's. But in case it's helpful, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what resonates, what you may challenge, any other thoughts or feelings that are coming up for you on listening into this conversation today. You can find me at Gary IP Catalyst, that's G-A-R-R-Y on Twitter, or Gary Interpersonal Catalyst on LinkedIn, and Gary Eterna, 01 word, at hotmail.com. Again, Gary with 2 R's. And again, please do look out for Mike Vacanti's details in the show notes. And final thing I want to leave you with is we do still have regular Humans First open inclusive conversations. Anybody is welcome. I, with others, rotate the hosting of the Monday call, which takes place at midday UK, 1 p.m. CET, Central European Time. There's also an Asian call every Friday now. And there's also, I believe, daily calls now on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, which are all US timed. There's lots of ways to get present, slow down. Some of the messages we've given today, connect with others, and just allow yourself to feel the emotion, work through it. Be kind to yourself, be kind to your family, be kind to each other, and just super excited to see how we can all co-create a better version of work in the world as we emerge out of this crisis going forward. All the very best for now. Be well, be safe, and please do make sure that you're connected to Callie, Mike, and myself. Take care for now. Really hoping that you enjoyed that exploration on the Value Through Vulnerability podcast. You can find out much more about Hexo Change at hexochangenow.com. That's hexochangenow, 1 word, .com. You can subscribe to a weekly newsletter at that website, which includes information about live stream conversations, further service offerings, blogs,
but also at in-person events, of which we have multiple each year. So I really hope that you'll join us. Do connect with me, Gary Turner, on LinkedIn, and I really hope to hear from you soon.